Hey, I'm Lance Frazier.
Damon Rosenberg.
My name is Trey Mason.
You're listening to the Piffles Podcast.
I'm Cameron Marshall, and you're listening to the Piffles Podcast.
It's so fun.
Stay tuned. I'm ready.
Yeah, we're ready. Piffles Podcast, episode 112, ready for you. We are Saskatchewan Rough Rider fans, and this is your premier Saskatchewan Rough Riders fan podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Alex.
I'm Steve.
I'm Greg.
And Steve, you had a comment for me.
I have to say, it's been a while since I've giggled at the opening. I love throwing in the let's have some fun.
Well, there's a little Ray Elgard in there from our talk with him a couple years ago. I can't really play the whole thing. It's really not not family appropriate. But if you go back to the website and on our Podbean, you'll find an interview with Ray Elgard, and go check that out, because still to this date, my favorite interview we've ever done here on the Piffles Podcast.
Yeah, easily top three for me. We've got some big ones tonight that might
rival that. It. Yeah, well, those are coming up soon, but we'll get to that in just a bit. Give us a follow on Twitter at Piffles Pod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
You'll find me at Safamud. Follow me at Greg on Sports.
Check us out on Facebook as well, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. Give that page the old thumbs up there. We're also on Instagram, just search Piffles Pod. And of course, the website, Piffles Podcast, your go-to for all things riders and your go-to for all things riders. Crickets, crickets, crickets. Piffles Podcast is brought to you by Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. Check out the great happy hour drink specials, half price Monday to Friday. New Dreamsicle Dripped Cone. Basically, it's like a creamsicle. That sounds pretty. I haven't gone to get one yet.
That thing looks amazing.
I can tell you from experience, it is amazing. And my wife can tell you if you dip it in chocolate afterwards.
No,
also amazing.
I saw that comment and I just scrolled past because I was like, I'm not even going to get into this.
So right.
No,
chocolate covered oranges are good.
They're amazing.
Or the chocolate, no, orange flavored chocolate.
It's right, dumb. No. You know what makes me mad? That fake baby shark blizzard.
You know what sold it? The graphics. Because with graphics, you can sell anything.
No, that made me so mad because I want one so bad. Blue, like raspberry nerds or whatever flavoring, and then gummy sharks. That's just mean. I don't care. Like, April Fool's pranks are great and fun and everything, and that was a good little thing. But you know what? That's what made me mad about it, was the fact that I really wanted that.
If you want one, you can just go down and take the candy to them.
But I have to do that, though. They should just have it there. They should have a baby shark.
It did look really good.
Right? Like, they should have a baby shark blizzard. And every time you get it, you have to order it like, baby shark, do-do-do-do-do, baby
and
shark.
And nobody would order one.
Do not get that in my head.
Well, it's in everybody else's head. So sorry about that. So, I want that baby shark blizzard. And I'm mad at you, Greg, for being in on that and not telling us.
When Sheldon reached out to me, he just asked for a graphic. And then when he actually put the blizzard beside it, I'm like, good play, sir.
Oh,
well played.
Mad.
Might be the second best April Fool's prank of the day.
Oh, definitely second best. I'm going to save my victory lap for later.
We'll get to that in just a second. We got a lot to get to, so let's jump right in. Time for the opening kickoff. Greg, you get a chance to laugh at it?
I didn't laugh this time.
No? Okay.
I'm feeling too good about myself.
It's been too long.
Yeah.
That too.
All right. Well, really the only rider news that we have is Derek Taylor. TSN, you know him, DT, does the details, hosts SportsCenter on the weekends every once in a while. He's been named the new voice of the riders on CKRM. That's a pretty good gig, going from TSN, the big fish, TSN, coming here. What are you guys' thoughts on Derek Taylor being, I guess, the replacement for Rod Peterson?
I like it. The minute he was announced, when I saw it on Twitter, I'm like, that is a good fit. The guy talks CFL football like very few do in this country. He's got an eye for stats, and he's got a history calling games back in his days at University of Manitoba, calling the Bisons games. And just recently, in 2017, I believe, he called a game for TSN, CFL on TSN. So I like it a lot.
You know, I think the biggest reason why this was a perfect pick for the Riders, it was because they're trying to follow Rod Peterson, who was known as the passionate homer. He was the guy who lived, breathed Rider football, and they were the best, and that's all it was. Derek Taylor is a CFL fan, loves the league, loves everything about the league, And he's going to give us that passion from a whole different angle. He's going to give it to us from the league side of things. Yeah, he's going to become a Rider fan. There's no doubt about that. You can't exist in this city without it, without kind of joining into the cult. The cult. Yeah, that's a good word for it. We are many. But
one of us. Right? One of us.
One of us.
But it's just... It was the right choice, and the moment I heard it, I was pumped, because not only is he going to be a great play-by-play guy, but he's a really fun dude, and I think Rider Nation is going
to
love him.
It's going to be interesting to see, because he's going to be hosting the Sports Cage and doing the calling the games, so it'll be interesting to hear him and what he brings to the show. And I mean, we're all used to Rod Peterson and hearing that, but I guess, you know, with Rod stepping down not too long ago, times are changing, and we'll see what we have with Derek Taylor.
It's definitely going to be a different style. While Rod was more the bombastic and excited about everything, I think DT is going to be a little more subdued compared to Rod, but I think the quality is going to be there.
It should be a good show, so we'll check that out. And speaking of Derek Taylor, he's going to be joining us here in just a little bit here. We're going to find out exactly how it all went down and what he's going to bring to the broadcast, so stick around for that. The only other thing that was going on was the CFL Combine, the results. Does anybody really care about something like that? Like, guess what? I know the guy's fast. I know running backs can run a 4.5. Like, I don't need them to go out and do that at a Combine. I really don't care.
Not a fan of the T-shirt Olympics or what?
No, it's a waste. I mean, I get what they're for evaluation and everything, but watch the game film. That's the real evaluation of a player. Like, great. Okay, an O-lineman can do 30 reps on the bench press. I hope so. Like, I mean, he's supposed to be strong.
That's what always confuses me about why so many people put, and scouts and GMs put so much stock on the combine and the skill and the stations and such. A guy can play if he can play. How many bench presses he does doesn't mean a thing.
The 40-yard dash. Yeah, great. You're fast and everything. When in football do you have a straight line without being touched and you're going? When you already have that 40 yards like going without being touched, you're gone already.
You want a like, good
you
measurement?
You don't start off by just sprinting 40 yards and nobody like jams you at the line of scrimmage or anything. And the vertical jump, great. You have a 40-inch vertical jump. Well, you're never ever going to stand there exactly like they do and jump up the way that they do at the combine in a game. You're never going to see that. It's to me, it's pointless.
If you want a good measurement, what they should do instead of doing the 0 to 40 or the 40-yard dash is measure them for the first 10 yards. See how fast they'd be off the line. See how fast they'd be coming out of a route. The things that you'd actually see in a football game, not, like you said, 40-yard dash. We got the chance to watch the combine the last couple of years with CFL Week, and I will admit I gained a whole lot of respect for CFL scouts, because unless they have eyes painted on their heads, I have no idea how they're staying awake through 2 days of dudes running and jumping and running sideways.
You basically wait for the one-on-ones. That's what I look forward to, and that was pretty cool to watch when it was here. But the draft is in a month, and the Riders have 6 picks. Now that we have Dakota Shepley signed under contract and Darius Bladek coming back from injury, O-line is all of a sudden looking pretty good and depth and looking pretty strong. What positions should the Riders draft? And I posted my thoughts here on piffespodcast.com, so you can go take a look at that. But the Riders have a first-round pick, second round, fourth, fifth, sixth, and eighth. Where do you guys go with picks one and two? Because normally you'd go with probably old linemen in one of them. Now, I'm not so sure.
All mock drafts right now have Riders taking an old lineman at 6. I don't actually blame them. If the player is that good, and they're all saying right now it's Saxlid kid out of, I can't remember where he's out of, but so they're all picking him as the Riders' offensive lineman. It doesn't hurt to always take another lineman.
No, if it's a slam dunk, absolutely great pick. But
and if they are talking about changing the ratio, you don't need those Canadian running backs anymore. It's all going to be linemen all the way.
I still think they need help at a skill position. I'd go the best polished receiver that can come in and not be a superstar right off the bat. But look what Andy Fantuz did in 2006 when he was drafted. Didn't play for the first half of the year, but he came on and had a couple hundred yards, and he really showed that promise of what he could be. And then 2007, his career really took off. start in the Grey Cup, had a great touchdown in that one. And Fantuzzo was fantastic for his career here. And going into, you know, when he came back from the NFL and went to Hamilton, he was great there for a little bit. And I think that's what the Riders need to do. They need to find their next Andy Fantuzzo because they really haven't had that top-tier Canadian receiver since then.
Well,
right. We've had good ones with Chris Getzlaff and Rob Bagg, but they're, I mean, their time's done, and we need to replace that. And look how good this team was from 2006 to 2013, take away 2011, but look how good it was when we had, but look how good that team was when you had good Canadians at the skills position, and they need to do that again.
I think it's odd. The Riders 2 years ago, it was we needed help at 3-4 positions. Right now, we're kind of in a spot where we can almost look at the best player available at that spot in the draft almost all the way through. But I'm with you. I think that the number one choice has to be that wide receiver. You can't go into the season with Patrick Lavoie and Corey Watson as your predicted top two Canadian receivers. Lavoie did fine. He was solid in the last half of or last third of last year, but he's not a guy that's going to go out there and make things happen. He's not going to be a wow guy. He's going to be that second down, get you 5 yards when you need it. And that's big, but we still need that top skilled receiver. But it never hurts to have quality O-linemen. The majority of our starters are over the age of 30.
And that's why I think Mitch Pickton is going to get every opportunity to fail this year, unless they do draft a receiver, because with Jake Hardy out, yeah, Watson is not the answer.
I mentioned in my article, Hamilton has 5 of the first 22 picks. Thank you, Eric Tillman. They've been able to stockpile their Canadian picks. I would love to see Jeremy O'Day get more, you know, maybe second or third rounders, just like Hamilton's done. So I put out my top 4 trade candidates. Not saying guys that I want to see traded from the team, but guys who you can make a case for that aren't essential to the team's success and long-term success, which would be better off getting draft picks for. And in no particular order, I'm going to name them, and let me know what you guys think here. And I know I'm going to get flack for this one for sure. Charleston Hughes, but hear me out. He's 35 years old.
Didn't he retire?
Yeah, he's gone.
April Fools.
3 hours late, he sent the fans into a tizzy. Dick move, Charleston.
Charleston Hughes, but he, like I said, he's 35 years old. Maybe you take the Wally Buono approach and you get rid of him a year early instead of a year late. Naaman Roosevelt, I only say that because of the injury issues he's had. I think he's absolutely vital to this year's success. But long term, I mean, he's starting to get up there in age and you can replace him with younger guys. Tyler Carpegna, we all know how great Brett Lawther is, and is there really a spot for Carpegna anymore? And kind of a dark horse, but Christian Jones, as electrifying as he is, and he's a game changer. You got Marcus Thigpen, you got Lucchese Pierrefoy, Ed Gainey can return punts as well too, and kick return. You have Kyron Moore. The team is loaded with kick returners, plus whoever else they bring in the offseason. Those were my 4. Thoughts?
In order of most likely to get traded, Carpegna, Jones, Roosevelt, Hughes. And I'm not saying that's the way it's going to go, way I want to see it or way it's going to go, but I think in order of importance for this team to keep, Hughes is more important. Roosevelt, with his injury history and our young receivers, we're okay. Carpegna is expendable with Lawther. And Jones, I love the guy, but I don't see a spot for him right now besides on the bench.
Yeah, they had trouble getting Christian Jones into the offense last year at the beginning of the year, and they added players after that. I think out of all the 4 that you listed, obviously, Carpegna's gone. He's either cut or picks up a paper clip or paper cut injury out of training camp if they can't trade him. But, I mean, I feel bad for the guy. He was turning the corner looking pretty good, and here comes Brett Lawther to steal the show. I don't see the team trading Naaman Roosevelt. After last year and after the lack of a real number one receiver, unless the young guys just break out of their shells to start out the year, there's no way they trade him.
Well, there's no way they trade him before the season starts. Like, they're not going to trade him for draft picks right now. They wouldn't assign, if they thought he was expendable, they wouldn't have re-signed him. Middle of the season, depending on how they're doing, maybe they look at trading him, but yeah, Roosevelt's probably not going anywhere.
Likely not, but just something to look at. Future moves, right?
Those are the guys that if you need to make a trade, you can afford to lose somebody and would actually get you something other than a bag of footballs back. I agree with you.
I still think there's going to be something in the plans. Jeremy O'Day is going to make some sort of, not a blockbuster deal, but a pretty important deal to get at least one more draft pick here in the next month before the CFL draft. But we'll see what comes out of that. The opening kickoff presented by Kathy Feshton of Royal LePage Regina Realty. Check out her Facebook page, Kathy Feshton, Royal LePage. Greg, do you want to take your victory lap right now? We don't have any music though. Like good walk on music like for
Rocky
you.
Theme song.
Well, no, like some like royal music, trumpets or something. Nothing.
No, I got nothing. I'm sorry.
Well, you'll just have to toot your own horn.
Why? In the words of Arn Anderson, I'm not one to toot my own horn, but toot toot. That April Fool's prank went way better than I ever contemplated. I want to thank you guys for giving me the hey, mind if I do this? Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Go do whatever the hell you want. And yeah, it worked really well. And I can't believe we caught so many people.
For those that didn't know, Greg put out a April Fool's Day article, exclusive new Rider jerseys leaked by New Era, and caught a lot of people. You had the R on the helmet, like the old Ottawa Rough Riders, but made it a Saskatchewan style. Kept the green and silver.
I brought back silver.
Brought back silver. And even had hashtag Rider Nation down the leg, just kind of poking a little bit of fun at Ottawa there.
I had to make fun of Ottawa.
And sidebar, how great was April Fool's Day for Ottawa? First off, you rip off their look. And a couple of them got pretty upset about that. Rider fans got upset about that. And that was pretty funny. But also, Jamie Elizondo, their offensive coordinator, quitting on them. That happened last Friday, but it was announced on April Fool's Day. And that was absolutely fantastic. So screw you, Ottawa, because you deserve that.
They weren't bitter about it at all by their press release either.
Yeah, Elizondo quits on the Red Blacks. Yeah, well, maybe don't hold the guy back, all right? Well, there.
Which is funny, because on that one, they could have let him interview. That's all they had to do. If they would have let him interview, there was no guarantee he was going to get the Rider job.
No.
I would say the chances of him getting this job were between 0 and 5%.
Yeah, I still think Dickinson was probably the favorite out of the gate. What's wrong with giving an interview? But it's too late in the season. Well, good luck finding an offensive coordinator now.
Well, they're fine. They'll get somebody out of the AAF that just folded. There's a dozen offensive coordinators that'll be available now.
But anyway, back to the jerseys. I want to thank everyone who said they liked it, despite the giant R on the helmet. And the fact that a lot of people said that it looked really good and really convincing. I put a lot of effort into that.
We might need to find a place that will actually make those jerseys, because there was a lot of people that really... The jersey itself, not so much the helmet, the pants, the jerseys went over really well with people.
It would be a nice look for the Riders, nice and simple, and what is old is now new. And that retro look, without being an actual retro look, I think would look sharp on the field.
I thought they looked pretty good, and I would actually go out and buy one if they look like that. Speaking of jerseys, the New York Jets, the NFL... apparently their new jerseys got leaked, and they basically look like the Riders' jerseys. So do we call them the New York Rough Riders? Do we call them the Saskatchewan Jets? Like, I don't know if you guys have seen the picture on Twitter, but go find the New York Jets jerseys.
Am I the only one who doesn't see it?
Yes.
I really don't.
Yeah. Yeah, you are.
Like, they're green and they have a stripe, but they're not.
Have you seen the Rider jerseys? They're green and have a stripe.
There's only so much you can do with green.
As a guy who is a part-time graphic designer, you're wrong. Yes, there are certain ways, but if you look at that picture and you zoom in on the far right, I did an experiment today at work. I walked around my office, took that picture, zoomed in, and showed everyone that picture. The guy was number 89. I'm like, hey, do you know who this is? Oh, yeah, that's Chris Getzlaff. To every single person. Thought it was a picture of Chris Getzlaff.
So if you zoom in on an approximate 12 pixels, it looks...
It's more than 12 pixels.
I definitely see the similarities, and I see why it got the attention. It looked a lot alike, but this complete knock... Maybe it was the stripes on the arms that did it for me. It was, they weren't the same.
Oh, no. The stripes on the arms are much larger, but the Jets have now changed their green to basically match the Rider green.
Yeah, that's true. They were a different shade.
Yeah, they were dark green before. They have the white pants with the green triangle down the leg now, like the Riders do. And yes, the arm stripes are slightly different. They have a black outline around the numbers like the Riders used to have. Like, it looks like, it doesn't look like the current set so much as it looks like the 2013 set.
Okay, now that I look at the, especially with the pants.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see it.
There you go.
Yeah, that. The, all right, New York Riders.
I apologize for doubting you. I'm sorry. I should never doubt the graphics guy when it comes to design. Not after last week.
No.
So you mentioned the AAF folding, and that's one big thing. We're not going to talk about the AAF too much, other than we did get a question, and I want to list a couple questions that we got from some listeners here. First, what does the collapse of the AAF mean for the CFL? Does it really mean anything?
Not that much.
It means nothing to the guys that have been here for a couple of years because they've already kind of established themselves. They're probably making more money than they would have at the AAF. But it's the first year players that wanted to get into the AAF because of the money. The money was better than it is in the CFL if they actually, you know, get it. but AAF folding and are there any players that you think would make their way back up here or that would look good back in Canada? Johnny Manziel? Anybody?
No. He's done.
Huh? Oh, come on.
I know one quarterback that Greg's probably antsy to see come north.
Luis Perez.
There you go, Luis Perez.
I want him in camp.
On the Riders negotiation list. You might see it now. Where else is he going to go?
Zach Stacy? Zach Stacy?
Trent Richardson?
Trent Richardson had 11 touchdowns in six games or
and
whatever.
2 yards per carry.
Goal line monster.
He was the
fantasy champion.
He was the blunt of the AAF.
LeGarrette Blount, yeah. Cionti Evans could make his way back up.
He's going back to Calgary.
Probably.
He comes back up here. And that sucks.
The problem is, though, you've got guys that played some CFL, and then they went to the AAF. That's a lot of football. And then they're supposed to be getting ready for training camp again. It's unless they come in late to camp, I see some guys going, I see people actually probably waiting for the XFL now.
Just so they can let their body rest.
But after they've watched an entire league fold out from under them, are they going to take a chance on yet another startup spring football league?
Yeah, at least Vince McMahon last time got to his championship game and they were able to have their million-dollar game in the XFL. And this one didn't even get to the playoffs.
And I don't think I don't know if you guys didn't notice. Also, the difference between the AAF and the XFL, Vince McMahon is 100% funding the XFL on his own. The AAF had investors.
Didn't Vince just sell a boatload of stock as well, too?
That's what I was going to say. Vince McMahon, after the collapse of the AAF, went out and sold another, like, almost
$280 million. Yeah,
over $250 million in stock again, just so he can ensure he gets a second year.
I wonder how much of that is him looking to buy equipment and some of the leftovers from. I'll give you $50 for every pair of pants and
the Dallas
shoulder
hot
pads.
Shots and yeah. How come they say AZ on the helmets? Don't worry about it, kid. Like, I don't know. The XFL has a better shot than the previous version of the XFL. I'm just kind of curious on what happened to the AAF's so-called 3-year plan, where they had all this money invested, which apparently did not exist as of week one.
Well, they did have a bunch of money invested week two with Tom Dundon, but apparently it looks like he just wanted the proprietary app. He wanted the gambling app.
He doesn't even get it.
He doesn't get it?
No, that came out today. Pro Football Talk says he doesn't even get that.
So he spent $70 million on nothing.
Essentially, yes.
On a tax write-off.
Basically.
Good job, Tommy.
Yeah.
That's why your Hurricanes suck.
I wouldn't want to play them in the playoffs, actually, for being completely honest.
You're the bunch of jerks. Anyway.
You're a bunch of jerks.
One other question we got here, and not about the AAF. We'll move on from that. Riders, should they get a veteran backup quarterback, and if so, who?
Kevin Glenn.
I knew that was going to be the first answer out of your mouth.
Who else?
Fourth time's a charm.
I mean, if you're going to go after a veteran guy, who?
That means I could Photoshop in another panel to the Kevin Glenn team tree.
Right.
I don't know. Why not develop the guys you got? Yes, if Claros goes down because of a strong wind, then you think about bringing in another veteran. But I don't see the point of bringing in another veteran behind him.
I don't think they do it. I don't think there's a point to it. But On the flip side, this is a team with a win now defense and a win maybe offense. Do you maybe look at bringing somebody in if things aren't working?
No, it's a ball control offense. It's going to be a running offense. And we've said this before, it's going to be exactly like last year. If we're not going to see, you're going to see max protection a lot of the times. You're not going to see Zach Kolaros, you know, doing the traditional 3 to 5 step drop, like and waiting, or, you know, seven step drop. But it's going to be get rid of the ball quick, get it to your playmakers, and let your running game take over, and just don't turn the ball over.
And maybe once or twice a game, you'll get that. You'll take your shot and hope you get it.
Yep.
And probably miss.
Probably.
Or go through Thigpen's wide open arms, yeah.
Or hit the Kenny helmet. Shaw in the face.
God, last year was painful to watch. It's even more painful to go back and think about.
It's so terrible to say that a 12-16 team, 12-6 team was so painful to watch, but they really were.
Just the offense. The defense was awesome.
Oh, the defense was great.
The special teams was great. Yep. Just that offense was just so damn maddening.
Well, maybe they'll find their next superstar on offense at the European draft. We find out on the 4th, on Thursday here, what the draft order is. So the CFL, with their 2.0 initiative here, is going to hold a draft just like they did for the Mexican League. They're going to do that with all the European players that came over for the combine. They're the only players that are allowed to be in this draft. And so April 11th, next Thursday, teams are going to draft. I don't know how many.
Two rounds?
They're
drafting all 18 of the players that were at the combine, because there's 2 rounds. 9 teams. That's all it is. So, and you have to draft the guys that were at the combine. You can't just pick from the other.
Yeah. So is this the best way to get the global players on rosters?
I guess so. Imagine being Mr. Irrelevant in a 2-round draft.
Your other option is just to do a lottery and just draw names out of a hat. Like, it's 18 players, 9 teams, 2 each. Like, throw sticks in the middle and go. Like,
What's going to upset people the most, I think, is if these guys actually start taking undeserved roster spots. If you get a guy who clearly can't show it at camp, can't show it through preseason, looks awful through the first 3 weeks, but you got to keep him on the roster because he's a global player.
Honestly, if the league wants to grow these international players, what you do is you put it on, you open up a practice roster spot for these global players that don't count towards anything.
Yeah, give every team 2 global roster or practice roster spots.
Yep.
And if they crack the roster,
then they're on the books.
Yep.
And then you may work it from there. But
or maybe look at if a global player cracks the roster, his salary counts 50% of the cap or something. Give some incentive to those guys if you want to see them on the roster. But I hope to God they don't force 1 or 2 of these guys physically onto the game day roster just to make money from CFL 2.0. I get what they're doing. I really hope it doesn't go that far.
I had to laugh when I saw that this draft was coming and they're still in the middle of negotiations on the CBA. And I'm like, it's like a game of poker. AAF folds. Vince McMahon's doing a rebuy. Ambrosi pushes all in with his European draft. And now the CFLPA has to call the bluff. It's interesting what's going on with the CBA and with the CFL continuing to push the CFL 2.0, knowing that this has to be collectively bargained. It's kind of fun to watch this, but at the same time, it's like, what is going on here? Like, at some point, they got to figure this out between the two sides.
No, and I think that's going to happen in the next, probably month or so here. So we'll keep our eye on that. But that's enough of us. People don't want to hear us talk anymore. They want to hear the guests. We tweeted out that we're going to have some big guests, and we mentioned one right off the top here, and we'll get to him first. Just announced last week, Derek Taylor of TSN will become the new voice of the Riders on 620 CKRM, will call the games and host the Sports Cage. Now, how did that all come about? Let's find out from the man himself, the new voice of the Riders, Derek Taylor. DT, thanks for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Now, first off, congrats on the new gig.
Thank you.
How did it all go down? Did the team reach out to you? Did Harvard reach out to you? Did you reach out to them?
I reached out to them. When I heard that Rod was resigning, he posted it on whichever it was, Twitter, Instagram. I thought, oh, okay. My wife has been living and working in Saskatchewan, so Saskatoon, for the last 2.5 years. And I thought, oh, this would be something to investigate because I love doing play-by-play. And Saskatchewan, she raves about Saskatchewan. She just went through you know, a couple of months of the old healthcare system, and she thought, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. I was in, I was out, it's beautiful. So I thought I would investigate it. You know, we got down the road a little bit, met with them, interview. They seemed to be interested in what I had. I was very interested in what they had, and eventually it all kind of came together a couple weeks ago.
Now, TSN is the epitome of sports in Canada right now. How hard is it to leave TSN to come to Regina, of all places?
Leaving TSN in and of itself, like, this was the place when I was 14 years old. I went, oh, you know what I want to do for a living? I want to anchor Sports Desk, because it was Sports Desk at the time, and Michael Landsberg and Brendan Connor were killing it on there. And I thought, man, I can't play sports for a living because, well, I move like this, but I could, you know, I could talk about it. I think this would be great. So to give up what was essentially been your dream job for a couple of decades it's hard. And then the people there have been so fantastic for going on 5 years, from the football side to the soccer side to, of course, the Sports Center crew that I work with has been fantastic. So that part's very hard. But, I mean, if you're going to leave your dream job, a job of this level of prestige and esteem, and honestly, I think this job is going to be a ton of fun. I can't picture many jobs I would have left TSN for, but this is certainly is one of them.
So now that as you're preparing to leave TSN, looking back, what's your favorite moment during your entire time there?
It's one I actually kind of got in trouble for. Is that okay? Are you okay with that one?
Oh, yeah.
So I was doing this. I was doing SportsCenter with Glenn Sheeler, and this was one of my favorite lines ever. We were promoting it was a playoff match into the winner would get into the Champions League group stage, and it was a club from Switzerland, Young Boys Bern versus Manchester City. And as I knew this promo was coming up, we were in a sound piece. I knew this promo was coming up. I'm like, hey Glenn, just stick with me on this one, and you know. The time ticks down. They go, cue, Derek. All right. Coming up on the network on Tuesday, Glenn likes Young Boys versus Manchester City. Yes, it's Champions League. And he turns to me and goes, that's awful. Yeah, you intimate your coworker likes that kind of stuff. It's going to be a good gag. Immediately, someone from upstairs emails me like, hey, we heard what you said. Don't ever do it again. I'm like, all right, I understand.
Oh, no.
I understand. So, that was being able to get off one of those one-liners that just, you know, just the pause I was extra proud of, just how I think it sold the gag. So, and Glenn was cool with it. Glenn's such a great dude. I knew he'd be fine. But that was probably my proudest moment. But if you want other ones, I mean, calling a preseason CFL game, I mean, I just about flipped out before it with my nerves, how they were all jacked up. Hosting panels, like I got to host the panel for a Maple Leafs game one night with Bob McKenzie and a couple of the other Dave Poulin and guys, and like to sit up there with those guys in that atmosphere, super intimidating, but I got through it without making a complete jerk out of myself. So a couple of the moments that I've been super proud of.
Now, nothing bad ever comes from the phrase, just go with me on this one. That's always a good thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Glenn likes Young Boys versus Manchester City. In my heart forever.
Speaking of TSN, are we going to still get the details of the CFL that you've become really known for in the CFL family? Or is it just going to be more riders related?
A lot of people have asked me that. And a lot of the guys, like some of the panelists and our CFL people said, hey, are you going to keep doing the details? And honestly, when you see the benefits of it for how it's kind of changed the way I look at football, I'm going to keep going with the collecting of all the data and stats and things like that, because one, they'll pay off on the sports cage. Two, they'll definitely pay off in the broadcast when you can talk about, you know, as you watch Jonathan Jennings go to Ottawa and go, hey, here's a guy who we thought liked to throw deep, but is now going to what was a short passing offense. And in fact, his short and intermediate passing numbers are better than Trevor Harris's. So this might be an interesting fit. Things like that and stuff the stories that you can tell with them, I'll definitely want to keep going with them. I sure hope I would get to keep doing it for TSN, because that's just a lot of fun. And it's a chance to work with talented people. Neil, the guy who produces the segments, and the editors that he works with have been fantastic on it. So I really hope I do, but it'll stay alive in some fashion, and then how it gets, if it gets put out, even if it's not on TSN, I think people will you know, get a sense of what I'm able to do. Because, yeah, I mean, you're right. It's kind of made me unique within CFL circles, and, you know, a lot of players reaching out to me going, hey, what are my numbers on this? What do you think about this? It's gotten me attention. And, yeah, honestly, I'm a numbers guy, so it's been a ton of fun despite all of the hours it takes.
So going into this new gig, what part are you looking forward to the most?
Oh, calling the games for sure. Like being at the stadium, it's all happening live. Even preseason, when the first preseason game, they go to Calgary, they'll have, you know, two dozen guys that are virtually no chance to make the roster, but to be out there and watch them smacking into each other and you know, just experiencing the live action and working with the crowd and feeling out the crowd and just enjoying the game, seeing things develop as they happen or as they're about to happen. I just love the energy of calling live sports. So, you know, the 20-plus times I get to do that this season, I'm going to cherish every one of them because that is so much fun.
Have you had a chance to talk to your partner in crime, Luke Melinder, yet?
Not yet. He DM'd me or he texted me, and we went back and forth a little bit, but I haven't been able to chat with him yet. I'm hoping to shortly after I get to Regina in a couple of weeks, because that's going to be critical, right? The relationship between the play-by-play guy and the color guy and how we're both going to make each other look good and, you know, where we're going to be a little extra entertaining when necessary and how to get – sometimes it ends up being how do you get out of each other's way? How do you know when to stop talking and how do you learn the other person's pauses? Oh, that's his pause, but he's got something else to say. Okay, that's his pause of how he's done. There's little tricks in there that you learn when you work with different partners. So when we get those down, we have a couple of preseason games to get them down before the season begins. I'm excited to get to know Luke better and to see what he's all about, because he brings obviously a wealth of playing experience to this job.
Now, looking at the SportsCage show itself, what are you going to bring to that show that fans can look forward to?
That's a good question, because I've been listening obviously more and more as the weeks have gone on, as this process has gone along. Obviously, I mean, the Riders are going to be front and center, number one. I want to see if we can expand out, and it won't necessarily be my biggest priority, but I want to see what we can expand out and, you know, reach out a little more to amateur sports in and around the province. I have a couple of thoughts in that vein, how we can perhaps incorporate more the Prairie Thunder and the Rams maybe into our coverage of the Riders, and, you know, game previews with things like that. And, yeah, honestly, it's going to be I don't know how different it will be from what Rod did. You'll probably hear different voices. There's people that I think that I've met in my time that I think, wow, this person needs some more exposure because I really think they're smart and I think they have a really good take on what's happening. So maybe the biggest thing as I think through it would be maybe we'll get some different voices in there, and I think people are going to like them.
So you mentioned that you're going to be coming here to Regina in a couple weeks. When are you going to be taking over the show?
That is still to be determined. We're still trying to figure out exactly, because I have to, with my wife and Saskatoon, I get to pack up this whole house and two dogs and figure out how we're going to get them to Regina. So that'll be interesting. It takes forever to put stuff in boxes. I spent 3 hours today putting stuff in boxes and thinking, is this the right box? Should I put this in a different box? Is this going to break? If it breaks, I'm going to feel awful. So when I'm done with the mental anguish of all that, it'll be within... Gosh, it'll be within 3 or 4 weeks. It can't be too long, right? Because the season is right around the corner and training camp is coming, should there be a season, if all the negotiations go well. So hopefully it won't be too terribly long. We're not quite settled on what the day is, though.
Now, you mentioned packing up and moving, especially your wife in Saskatoon. How was it easy for you to go to her and be like, hey, I'm going to take this job in Regina. Want to move with me? Or like, was it a tough negotiation to get her to Regina?
No, not at all. Like, she was the one who first spotted that Rod's announcement that he was resigning. And she said, hey, what's happening here? She knows that I've wanted to do play-by-play for some time, and I got a little taste of it in 2017, and that's kind of the way I wanted my career to go. And I thought, oh, okay, yeah, let's look at this. So we've talked about it a ton as it went along, because it is a huge decision, right? Like we talked about earlier, leaving your dream job is a huge decision. So... you know, will she like Regina? Well, she loves Saskatchewan, and no reason to think she wouldn't love Regina when she eventually makes her way down there as work allows. So, no, it wasn't, from her perspective, it wasn't tough at all. And for me, it gets less tough when you think, oh, yeah, after essentially 4.5 years apart, I get to live with my wife again, and she gets to see our two dogs again. Oh, yeah, this is going to be pretty good.
Now, you mentioned, of course, Roddy, who's been the voice of the Riders forever. An entire generation, essentially, of Rider fan grew up on him. Is there, do you feel any pressure behind that, or this is going to be your own show and just go with it and have fun?
Oh, I think it's impossible not to feel pressure coming behind someone like Rod. There was a guy on Twitter who said, you know, you're the first guy my mom brought home after she left my dad. And I'm like, drawing the parallel between, you know, stepdads and me filling Rod's shoes. And you're like, yeah, you get that. Because, I mean, I had that with Peter Marr as a Calgary Flames broadcaster back when I was growing up. I'm not sure if Peter still does the games in Calgary, but no, this was the 1980s. And as much as I was an Oilers fan, I would listen to those Flames broadcasts and, oh, this is my voice. Or Ed Whalen, who did Stampede Wrestling. I'll never forget Ed Whalen. So whoever comes next is just not going to be the guy before him. I think Rod and I stylistically will be different. I hope to be someday as good as he was, because people who have heard him a lot more tell me, you know, he was really great at capturing the emotion and what was happening on the field. So I certainly hope to be as good. And absolutely there's pressure. It'd be silly to think there's not, when you're taking over, you know, you're fresh to the job and essentially fresh to the province. And you're taking over from a guy who is a Saskatchewan institution.
Now, I have to say, you should have seen the my co-host here's face light up when you mentioned Stampede Wrestling.
So it's going to be a ring-a-ding-dong dandy.
Ed Whalen and Jim Davies and the Cuban Assassin and Muckham Singh and Gamma Singh and all the... You saw all the hearts when they were super skinny, and then they went, oh, okay, they went to WWE and they all put on a ton of weight. How'd that happen? Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, Stampede Wrestling was... But remember how bad Bad News Allen was? That dude was bad.
You don't mess with Bad News Allen.
He was amazing. Why are you letting him use a fork on Bret Hart? What are you doing? This is so wrong. Oh, right. Okay, wrestling. I didn't quite know about wrestling at that point, but man, was it entertaining.
So if we ever start a wrestling podcast, we know who to go to first.
Oh, if you want to talk to the 1980s, I've lost touch with wrestling, though having watched the Kenny Omega Engraved on a Nation last week, that may bring me back, because that was phenomenal. And that dude, man, that dude is so very good at expressing all the range of emotions. If you guys haven't seen it, absolutely watch it as fast as you can, because he has an amazing story to tell.
Now, last word to you. You've got an open mic to Rider Nation. Anything you want to say to people who might not really know who Derek Taylor is yet?
Well, I am an enormous fan of the CFL. I paid money to try and see Rocket Ismail when he played the Calgary Stampeders back in the day. And then I think he jumped on Dave Sapunjis' head and got kicked out of the game. And I thought, I don't have a ton of money. And now you're like thrown out of the game. What are we doing here? So I'm a huge fan of the CFL. My mom was a Riders fan. She's from Rokenville, Saskatchewan. My wife, when we moved from Winnipeg, she was able to finally come out of the closet and tell everybody she's a Riders fan. So as much as I didn't grow up with the Riders, there are Riders right now that I absolutely love. And the more I get to know them, and the more I get to be around this team, and the more I get to be around the people of Saskatchewan, I'm going to become a Riders fan, that's for sure. So, yeah, Rod was there for 20 years, and you love Rod, and we can all still love Rod, but I just need a chance, because I think my passion for the CFL is going to match what you deserve in a play-by-play broadcaster and a host of the Sports Cage. So come on over when I get onto the radio and see what I have to offer, and hopefully you like it.
Well, Derek, we're looking forward to seeing what you bring to us and being the new voice of the Riders. Congrats again, and thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Derek Taylor, new host of the Sports Cage on CKRM, and going to be the play-by-play guy for the Riders on game day as well. I'm looking forward to seeing what he actually brings to the table. We talked about this just to start the show, but it's going to be fun. I think he's going to be really good, and yeah, there's probably going to be some growing pains, and he you're going to get the people saying, well, he's no Rod. Well, no, but Rod was also wasn't the guy that he replaced. So, I mean, give Derek Taylor some time. It'll be great. I think he'll do just fine.
I think it's going to be great.
Now, seeing as this is the first show of the new month, of the month of April here, let's do a Rider alumni. Try to do this once a month and bring on a former player of the team and see what's going on with him right now. Now, this week on the Piffles podcast, we're happy to be joined by arguably one of the most popular Riders of the last little bit, even though he only played two seasons here. All-star defensive end, three-time Grey Cup champion, Mr. Ricky Foley joins us on the line. Ricky, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How you doing?
Oh, we're doing great. Thank you. First question, 2013 Grey Cup. We got to ask right off the top. That whole season 2013 in Saskatchewan, what was that like?
Oh, that's a big, big question. You know, it was amazing. It was my best experience with the CFL as far as game day, city excitement. It just felt like professional football. I was having a conversation today with one of my coworkers, and it just felt like professional football, how it's supposed to be done. Every game was pretty much sold out. All the home games, all the boys are veterans on the team that we brought in, and something very special. And you know, like you kind of alluded to earlier when you intro me there, like played 12 years in the league and only two in Saskatchewan, but I don't hold any time or any team more dear in my heart than I do than the Rough Riders, that's for sure.
So three Grey Cups, one as a rookie, 2012, 2013 at home. Does one mean more to you than the other, or does one stand out more?
I'm fortunate enough, unfortunate enough, I never won any with the team back to back. You know, I never won with the same group of guys more than once. But with that, they're very unique. All three of them are just the complete. I got to experience everything in professional football in the CFL, and that's why I'm. You know, retirement's not too hard for me. I don't really watch games and be like, oh, I wish I could go out there. I don't really have that because winning as a rookie, that's something special. You're young. You're just kind of trying to follow the veteran guys and their unique experience. And it's great. My first year, like, oh, man, this is awesome. Get a ring as a rookie. You get to bring it back to your hometown, you know, and everybody celebrates that pretty good with your boys and your family and your college teammates. And then had to wait a little bit, but you know, went down and did the NFL thing, which was also pretty fun and exciting, and got a taste of that, and then came right back to Toronto, and the 100th Grey Cup was, you know, the hometown kid and with a bunch of my hometown boys and teammates and friends for forever, and the 100th Grey Cup in Toronto was a huge celebration that I got to do, and then that was more of a personal family Grey Cup, and the next year in Saskatchewan was just, you know, the Mecca Canadian football, and the best fans, the best team, the best organization, and one-on-one was just something completely different than the year before, and I just enjoyed it so much from a personal level of for the other guys. Like, I just loved sitting there and just watching the other boys win it. You know, it's kind of like seeing myself in the mirror the year before. That was pretty cool.
Talking about back-to-back, in 2014, Vanjabold, Darien goes down. What were you thinking at that moment in time?
We were better in 14. Like, our team was actually better than 13. You know, I guess because we were such a good team and we had such a good defense that we actually thought we could, you know, still make a run and still, you know, get, as long as we got to the playoffs, which we, you know, we started like 9-0 or something. And we knew as long as we were being the playoffs and just win one and then roll our dice against Calgary in the Western Final and then get to the, you know, get to the Grey Cup, maybe we could win, right? And when Darien went down, it's still, you know, you're optimistic as a professional athlete, but you know, he was the MVP of our team. As many good players as we had, it was tough. It was tough to lose Darien, and well, tough's an understatement, right? Like, that was when you look back at it now, it's easy to say removed from the moment. Like, that was kind of the end of our season, right? But yeah, we still, one of the funnest games I ever played, and that I lost for sure, was that I always remember that Western semifinal against Edmonton that year, man. Our defense like only allowed someone like 9 points or something, and we just balled. It was snowing out in Edmonton, defense was flying around, and you know, despite like 5 interceptions or something, we still only lost 11-9, I think it was, and I think one of them might have returned for a touchdown or something. So anyways, yeah, it was a crazy game, but it's unfortunate when Darien went down for sure.
Now, following that offseason, you get traded back to Toronto. How did that go with you? Like, where were you when you got told, and what was your reaction at the time?
Yeah, I was actually, it's funny, I was actually talking about that today, same conversation with a coworker. Like, there has been some rumblings, and I had informed people back east with the Argos, like Andre Dury and Matt Black, and they had told some of the people in the organization that I was going to sign. Me and Brendan Taylor had a deal already worked out. I was just waiting until the offseason to sign it and to announce it and whatnot. They had to do some things with salary cap and whatnot. But yeah, I knew I was going to sign with the Riders. And I told them, like, I got a deal pending. I'm taking it. I don't want to come back home. You know, like, Toronto was great. Won there, cool. But I'm not leaving this situation. I'm playing out the rest of my days in a green uniform. And they got word back to the management and whatnot. I was signing. I was good. And so I signed, and I got paid my bonus on, I think it was January 1st. And I'm like, okay, things are great. And I'm with me and my fiance out in Vancouver. And, we were getting hooked up with a job. She's a teacher. She was going to move to Saskatchewan, Regina, to get a job as a teacher. And then just got the call. And I woke up one morning, had like 15 text messages and like 20 calls. I'm like, what the hell's going on? And they're all Regina numbers. So I'm like, oh man, what the hell's going on? What happened? And I called Brent Taman, and he's like, we traded you for Shamry back to Toronto. I was like, oh, man. So, good to go back to Toronto because it's home. And, some of my best friends in my life are on that team. So that was fun. But I didn't want to leave Saskatchewan.
I think there's a lot of fans here that probably think the same thing. They would have loved to have you stick your career out here. They're still asking for you to come back.
Sorry, I still would have been playing. That's the thing, too. Like, if I was still playing, I haven't said this publicly or otherwise, but I'd still be playing, honest to God, if it wasn't, if I was still in Saskatchewan. Like, it's just the environment and, like I said, the quality of every game, like the game day experience, right? Like, that's what makes everything worth it. Like, the grind on your body as an older guy, the diet, the training, all that stuff that the work you have to do to put in as an older guy, it is more. And when you're playing in front of that crowd, though, in that city, especially with a new stadium, you know, too. Like, I'd still be playing if I was in Saskatchewan, for sure, I would be. But it's not really the same anywhere else, and it kind of doesn't make it worth it. I know it sounds bad, but that's just me being kind of honest. It's just, yeah.
So you mentioned the diets and changing everything as a, you know, player getting older in his career. What exactly did you have to change in your like training and getting ready to keep up with the young guys?
Yeah, I guess I was lucky because I was always a fast guy. That was kind of my thing, right? My thing was that I didn't have much football under my belt, but I was a fast, athletic guy. So that always helped me. But to keep up with the younger guys, it really just became about practice. Like, I could play once a week still. A lot of guys will tell you that into their 30s and late 30s and probably even the 40s. They say, well, I could still play once a week. And they could. I could, but the grind of the everyday practice, and nowadays practice is a whole lot more intense than it used to be when I first came in the league. You can't take any, I don't even want to say plays off, but if you're hurt, you have to basically take practice off these days. And I don't like doing that. So you kind of get in the struggle of, well, you got to learn almost like you can't, nowadays you really can't play hurt, because if you do, you're going to show not being as fast, as quick, you know, or moving as well. And that they attribute that to being age, right? Not necessarily being like your body's banged up. So, and then if you start taking days off practice, then coaches start thinking like, oh, he's getting old, he needs days off practice. So it's kind of a struggle every day of just, you know, having to go full go all through the week, not being able to bounce back as quick and then go play a game. That's the hardest part, right? And it's just the hours. It's not just the, you know, diet, it's the massage, the physio, and all this modern day stuff that guys are spending money on their bodies. Like, there's guys down in the NFL that spend literally $1 million a year or more on their bodies and diet and training. And like I said, you got to be, yeah, to do that, I give those guys so much respect and admiration, because, you know, that's a lot. Like, you don't have time for anything else. Like, you don't have time to set up post-football career. You don't have time really for your family. It's tough.
Now, looking back a few weeks ago, word got out that the CFL and the CFLPA were talking about dropping the ratio, the Canadian ratio, from 7 players to 5, or starters, as it were. You were pretty vocal against that at the time. What was the biggest reason for your, disagreement with that idea?
Number one, being a Canadian kid who, in the CFL has given me and my family so much, I wanted to protect the interests of similar kids like me coming up. I think Chris Getzlaff had probably the most, I get a little heated. You guys know me. I get a little animated, right? So, I'm not as, I can be eloquent when I need to be, but other times if people are talking ignorantly, I'm just as easily can respond to you in kind. So that's, well, Chris Getzlaff had a great tweet. Not sure if you guys saw it. And it just basically pointed out the fact that a guy like him would never have got a chance to be a starter in the CFL. And this guy, he's a great 1,000-yard receiver year after year, right? You're talking about a great player. And I know myself and a lot of guys agree with that. Like, I didn't play football for more than 3 years in college. I didn't know what I was doing. I never would have been given a chance to start a defensive end. Like, there's no way. Like, I had to fight tooth and nail for 4 years to get an opportunity to play rush end. Like, there's no short side DN. Sure, like Brett Johnson before me, he got a chance, but he only got a chance because he was Canadian. I played with him. I talked to him. And that, you're talking about Hall of Famer, defensive MVP, like a much better player than I was. And then I was on the wide side, and there was no Canadian to play the wide side defensive end, they told me, in BC for like 20-something years as a Canadian. So for them to give me that opportunity was just based on the ratio, but then I go out and lead the league in sacks and had a good career. So if you lower the ratio, you're going to be taking those opportunities away from guys like me, guys like Chris, guys like Brett Johnson, so on and so forth, who had a great career, pay it back to the CFL, pay it back to the community. You're going to be missing out on guys who are just American guys who just like, okay, it was an opportunity to go to the NFL. And then they take off. They don't spend that much time in the CFL. They just take off the NFL, and it's like, okay, great. That's not the way I think it should be. And lowering the ratio is just going to increase the pay discrepancy as well, which is most American guys' point. So that's my personal opinion, but that's just the way I feel.
What is Ricky Foley up to now?
My wife got married. That's one of the blessings in disguise, but when I got traded from Saskatchewan to Toronto, then subsequently got released and retired. I went out to BC for a year. Me and my ex-fiance got back together again. We got married. I got my first child on the way, so I'm very excited about. And I'm bouncing back and forth between the coast doing construction and building some houses out here, and basically in the construction and land development with some farmland I bought off my dad. And I'm going to get into that game. I enjoy it. It's what gets me up out of bed in the morning, and I love it.
Now, one of the things you're kind of well known for here in Saskatchewan especially is you met a young lady out in Toronto. She actually had to fly out to come see you. But Tiffany, I'm sure you know who I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
Tell us about meeting Tiff. What was that like for you?
That's just one of the things with Saskatchewan football, and I think the guys, the Rough Riders, the players, and they take that on very well, and we're very accessible, and every guy stops and talks to the fans after the game right outside of the old, at least I did outside of Old Mosaic, and outside the fan shop, and the locker room, you have to walk through the fans to get out the parking lot. And one day I just saw Tiffany there, and she was there with the family, and I just noticed her, and I just went up to her and talked to her and said hi to her. A few other guys were saying hi to her, and I just joined in. And to be honest with you, it just kind of organically happened from there. And I think we started talking on social media, and the friendship just blossomed. And I plan on seeing her this weekend when I'm in Regina for the event, and her and her family. And that experience of her, with the Sunshine Foundation, shouts out to them for fulfilling so many young kids' dreams. Like, that was probably the most humbling experience of my career when you think about someone, they get to choose basically anything they want to do in the world. And Tiffany's, wish was to come see a game in Toronto with her and her family and watch me play. Like, that's, growing up as a kid, farm kid out here in Ontario, you never think that something like that's ever going to happen, right? You never think that you're going to do something in life or sports or whatever that someone's going to want that, like, it's that's pretty crazy. That's as I get older, my further away from my football career, it becomes more about stuff like that than it does about the rings or the championships. It's the people, it's the relationships, it's my ex-teammates, it's experiences like with Tiffany. It's that kind of stuff that really makes you, you know, proud of what the CFL has done for you and what you're able to, you know, do for other people.
Now, if you had one thing that you could say to her in person right now, what would that be? Actually, you know what? Do you mind if I cut you off for a second? I got a bit of a surprise for you. We actually brought Tiffany on the line here as well. Tiffany, are you there?
Yep.
Hi, Tiffany. I have a surprise for you. You don't know about this either. I have a friend of yours on the phone, Tiff. You might know him pretty well. You have a hat and I think a shirt as well. It says Team Foley, right?
Yep.
Good job, guys. That's a pretty good surprise. Way to set this up. Tiff, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Yep. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. We were just talking a couple hours ago. So, did you know this was happening? I did.
I didn't know this happening.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I've got a Team Tiff hat too. Actually, it's funny. I think my last game in Saskatchewan was with the Lions. You remember that, Tiff, when you gave me the Team Tiff hat?
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Now, Tiff, I'm sorry. I feel bad because we said that we were going to talk about your paintings here, and we can talk about that a little bit later. But I was actually just asking Ricky here if he could say one thing to you right now. What would it be, Ricky? Do you want to answer that now?
Yeah, I'll see you Sunday. You got to pick a breakfast spot though. You still haven't told me where we're going for breakfast though, so you have to message me and let me know.
Okay.
So, Tiff, Ricky was just telling us about meeting you and what that meant to him. What did it mean to you to meet Ricky and now be friends with him?
It meant a lot. I just have his support through everything.
And what was the coolest thing about meeting him the first time?
Just how nice he was.
Ricky, is that true? Are you a nice guy?
Yeah, I don't know why nobody thought I was when I was playing, but yeah, I'm a pretty nice guy. I should say when Tiffany came to Toronto, she got to see my puppy, my little Snoopy. The dog is a puppy, and he's a big grown dog now. And we actually got to run into PK Steuben. He trained at a gym across the street from my old condo, and he was pretty cool, pretty gracious. Do you remember that, Tiff, when I took the picture with PK?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, he was a great guy, too. That was pretty cool of him to do that. So
now, Tiff, is there anything that you have anything for to say to Ricky right now?
I don't know.
Just a little bit in shock right now?
Yeah.
Well, sorry to spring that on you like that, but I just thought that was, you know what, if we're talking to Ricky Foley, we have to talk to Tiffany as well, right?
Yeah. I can hear the family. I think I can hear your family laughing in the background, too, so make sure you say hi to them for me, Tiff.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining us here, Tiff. We're actually going to we'll talk to you a little bit later about your pictures. Just wanted to give you a little bit of surprise here. Did we surprise you?
Yeah, a lot.
A little embarrassed right now?
A little shocked.
Well, I hope that was a good little surprise for you, and we'll hopefully see you soon, Tiffany.
Okay.
Okay, have a great night.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye, Tiff.
Bye.
Hey, Ricky, sorry to kind of spring that on you there. Just thought that'd be a good little fun thing to do with you.
Man, that was, you completely, it doesn't happen often. I don't get caught off guard that often, but you completely did tonight. So hats off to you guys. That was pretty cool. I appreciate that.
Well, thanks for playing along with us tonight, and thanks for taking time to talk to us. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Anytime, guys.
There we go. There was Ricky Foley and, of course, Tiff McLennan. You know her on social media. She is the CFL artist, wonderful young lady, and if you know anything about them, it was her dream to go out to Toronto and go see Ricky Foley and meet him, and she did that, and you heard about that here, and that was pretty cool to get them, surprise them and embarrass Tiffany a little bit, and I know she was a little bit shocked at that, so that was but that was a lot of fun.
I just love the fact you could hear her family laughing in the background.
Her mom knew about it and that we were going to pull that off and do that to her. But you know what we'll do is we'll make good. We'll make it up to Tiffany and we'll actually talk about her artistry. One of our next episodes coming up here and we'll talk about her paintings and colorings and whatnot. So we'll do that a little bit later on. But that's going to do it for us this week here on the Piffles Podcast. Make sure you go to facebook.com/Piffles Podcast. Give us the thumbs up there. Follow us on Twitter at PifflesPod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
You can follow me at Sathamod.
Follow me at Greg on Sports.
Check us out on Instagram as well at PifflesPod. And go to the website, PifflesPodcast.com. You'll see stuff up going up there all the time. Of course, Piffles Podcast, your premier Saskatchewan Rough Riders fan podcast, brought to you by our great friends at Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. And special thanks as well go to Kathy Festian of Royal LePage Regina Realty, Tallgrass Apparel, Churchill Brewing Company, and Underdogs Memorabilia for their support to make this show possible. As we leave you, this is Tyler Gilbert, Ghost Behind Your Mind. The ghost behind your mind, I'm waiting for you. I won't pretend to be blind, like I've had for so long. The ghost